Thank you for downloading from the BBC. For details of our complete range of podcasts and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.
Welcome to One Planet from the BBC World Service. I'm Mike Williams. Today, we'll devote the programme to the nuclear debate. Is power from atomic fission the great green answer to the world's energy problems, or a lurking threat to the environment and to human health? What is the future for nuclear? It's a timely question because exactly a year ago, a nuclear disaster in Japan dramatically reframed that debate. Here, maybe 60, 100 people have gathered at a conference centre in London to address that question. An interesting mix of people and opinions. They're brought here by the University of Birmingham and its Commission on Nuclear Power Policy. I've seen Jonathan Porritt, the former director of Friends of the Earth here. He's now an environmental campaigner and an anti-nuclear campaigner too. Also, Keith Parker, chief executive of the Nuclear Industry Association. There are engineers and academics here, civil servants, at least one lord, a couple of baronesses on the invitation list, four MPs, enough professors to run a good-sized college. All of them engaged in a complicated debate.
I have been in the nuclear business the whole of my career and went into it because I thought it was a good thing. It's an energy resource that the world can't ignore.
Clearly, we've got nuclear around at the moment. Whether it's got a long-term role or whether other low-carbon technologies will outcompete it.
I think we need to base our energy demand on proven technology, full stop. We can't hope for things to turn out right. We're in a desperate situation.
This time last year, these discussions became even more urgent and fraught. As Lucy Burns now reports, it was last March when a nuclear emergency was declared in Japan after massive destructive waves crashed inland.
The tsunami that hit the northeast coast of Japan last March swept buildings, vehicles and people in its path. The wave and the earthquake that caused it killed more than 15,000 people and left the nuclear power station of Fukushima badly damaged. Initially, the government insisted that there was no danger, but the situation soon began to spiral out of control.
BBC News with Marion Marshall. There's been a big explosion at a nuclear power station in Japan that was damaged in Friday's devastating...
The Japanese government has said a partial nuclear meltdown may be underway in a second reactor at the earthquake...
The Japanese authorities are battling to cool overheating nuclear reactors at a power station damaged in...
A 12-mile exclusion zone was declared around the site, forcing more than 80,000 people to leave their homes. Increased radiation levels were reported in food up to 200 miles away. It took 9 months to stabilise the Fukushima site, and the government says that dismantling the plant altogether could take decades. In the wake of the disaster, most of the country's other 56 nuclear power stations were shut down for testing, with the last one due to close in early May. It's not yet clear whether they will restart, and Japan's nuclear industry is struggling to get back on its feet. Popular support for nuclear power has not recovered from the disaster. Nearly 80% of respondents in a recent poll by a Tokyo newspaper said that Japan should phase out nuclear power. But can Japan afford to do without its nuclear reactors? Anthony Froggatt is a senior research fellow in energy policy at the think tank Chatham House in London.
Prior to Fukushima, nuclear contributed around 30% of the country's electricity, with the rest being made up of fossil fuels. The intention was that the contribution of nuclear would increase to around 50% by 2030. With an additional increase in renewables, thereby to some degree decarbonising Japan's electricity sector. However, what we've seen after the accident is a gradual decline in nuclear generation and a rethink of the country's energy policy. It is very clear that with such a sudden decrease, you have to replace that with something. And on the short term, there's not many options in terms of they've increased the level of imported natural gas and used oil stations that were not used very frequently, more frequently, and increased coal. But also, and very importantly, they have undertaken very large programs of both energy efficiency, and they're also changing the way in which electricity is managed, making the system more efficient.
So far, Japan's lights have not gone out without nuclear power. But as the economy grows and the country recovers from last year's disaster, Japan will have to discuss whether to reopen their shuttered nuclear power stations after testing, and make some tough decisions about their nuclear future.
Lucy Burns reporting there. Well, while the people here head for the buffet tables and the drinks, I've come into a quieter room to meet three people. Professor Martin Freer, Director of the Centre for Nuclear Education and Research at the University of Birmingham, which has been organising this meeting. And two others I mentioned earlier, Jonathan Porritt, formerly of Friends of the Earth, more recently co-founder of the Forum for the Future, and Keith Parker, Chief Executive of the Nuclear Industry Association. Welcome to the programme, everybody. Mr. Parker, first, briefly, if you would, the case for nuclear power.
Well, the case for nuclear power, I think, is that it's a low-carbon form of electricity generation, which has a role to play in reducing carbon emissions and therefore combating the causes of climate change. It's certainly in the UK, it's also seen as a secure, more or less indigenous form of electricity generation, so it contributes also to security of energy supplies as we become more dependent on imported sources.
A few points that I want to come back to there, but just let me turn to Jonathan Porritt, your views on that, please.
I don't really think that nuclear has any part to play in the energy world of the future. It's very expensive. It generates a lot of waste that we still don't know what to do with. It causes all sorts of problems with nuclear proliferation, countries using their civil power programs to create weapons. It leads to tremendous security problems in terms of what the security services have to do to protect nuclear facilities. And if you look at what we could achieve through renewable energy, energy efficiency, combined heat and power, energy storage systems, smart grids, and all the rest of it, the really exciting technologies going on out there, frankly, we don't need it.
Professor Freer, how should we decide between these two clearly opposing views? Actually, first of all, I should ask you your position on nuclear.
I'm a nuclear physicist, so it won't surprise you that I have a measure of vested interest in the future of nuclear power. But having said that, I'm a pure nuclear physicist, and my interest really focuses on how you synthesize elements in stars rather than what happens inside nuclear reactors. Nevertheless, what I would say is that having listened to the arguments, I find it very hard to see how we can, as a country, generate the energy, electricity that is required to meet our energy budget in the future without nuclear power.
So, Jonathan Porritt, we're stuck with it.
Well, we're stuck with it for the moment, and so is the rest of the world. I mean, we're going to get a lot of new nuclear coming forward in countries like China and India and elsewhere, and there will be large new programs of that kind. I don't think we're stuck with it for very long. When I look at the innovation journey going on around solar power, photovoltaics in particular, when I look at some of the other renewable energy systems, I look at advances in storage systems, batteries, all the rest of it, this is where innovation is moving very, very fast. Not much innovation ever happens in nuclear power. Pretty much with the European pressurized reactor, we're talking about the same clunky old technology updated a bit for the 21st century. And when you look at fourth generation reactors, as they're called, which is the trendy way of saying, oh, there's going to be a better nuclear technology around the corner, most people say 20 years away from now.
I can see Keith Parker's leaning in. I think he wants a word here.
Well, I don't think anyone would dispute that we need all the sort of low-carbon technologies that are available, and that includes renewables, carbon capture and storage to reduce emissions from fossil fuels, but also we need nuclear, I think, as part of that mix. I think it's a mistake to say that there is no innovation going on in nuclear. There have been developments, and these plants are they produce less waste. They're safer, perhaps, than
Keith,
a safer system.
Keith, where have they been built?
They're being built at the moment in China.
So we don't have any operating record as yet. You make these claims that they will generate less waste, be more efficient and less expensive. But we don't actually have any evidence yet, but you state it as a fact.
Well, the designs are developed in such a way that they will reduce the waste. They are being built at the moment, both in Europe and in China, and we are seeing, you know, extremely good records, certainly in China, of building these plants to time and cost. And I think that gives us confidence that when they're built in the UK, that we will be able to deliver them in a timely way and in an economic way.
Briefly, Professor Freer.
So I was just enjoying Jonathan's optimism. And it's great to travel on a journey in an optimistic way.
But forgive me for interrupting you. Isn't everybody being optimistic here? You're both keeping your fingers crossed for innovative new technologies which are going to make the world a safer, cleaner place. You've all got your fingers crossed, don't you?
Well, I would argue that we would all like to arrive at the place that Jonathan has painted. But we have an established technology, nuclear power, which can fill the gap right now.
Okay, but there's a problem with nuclear power, and one of the big problems is public perception. After the Fukushima disaster, public opinion turned against nuclear, not least in Germany. The Chancellor there, Angela Merkel, made a remarkable decision that all of the country's nuclear power plants would be closed within 12 years. This is one of the world's biggest industrial economies, reliant on manufacturing, going to switch to greener sources. Beyond the closure of nuclear, the aim was to have 80% of the country's needs met by wind and solar and other renewable energy sources by 2050. Very ambitious. And as Steve Evans now reports from Berlin, very difficult too.
A year ago, Chancellor Angela Merkel had the name of the disastrous Japanese nuclear power station ringing in her ears.
Fukushima!
Everywhere she went, demonstrators chanted. A short time later, she, a physicist by training, announced that German policy would be reversed. All the country's nuclear power stations would close by 2022. Wind and solar would help fill the gap. Since then, conflicts have emerged. Change is expensive, according to Claudia Kempfert, a professor of energy economics in Berlin.
We have two ministries which are now have different interests, which is the environmental ministry and the economics ministry. The politicians do not agree on the substantial master plan. There is an increase of the numbers of coal power plants already planned, and they will produce electricity in the next 5 to 6 years, so the share of coal will definitely be increased. But we need also grids to the European neighbours in order to import more electricity from European neighbours.
At the Brandenburg Gate in Berlin, thousands of workers in solar power companies recently demonstrated. Subsidies for installing solar panels are being cut, and that means their jobs are on the line. The slowdown of the economy means public money is tighter, so prompting a rethink about alternative sources of energy. Does solar make sense in Germany, for example? Fritz Fahrenholz, chief executive of one of the subsidiaries of the giant RWE electricity company, says Germany gets about as much sunshine as Alaska.
We should deploy solar energy where the sun is shining. Yeah, Spain, Italy, North Africa, but not in Germany. Only 800 hours. In Spain it is 2,400 hours shining the sun, so that means the cost is one-third.
So solar is threatened even as Germany plans to move out of nuclear. Not that that move away from nuclear is certain. The neighbours haven't fallen out of love with it. Not France or the Czech Republic or Poland, which is planning to move into nuclear. Bund, the German Green organisation, is lobbying hard against Polish plans for a reactor near the border with Germany. But there's a history here, as Bund's Miko Omientaski acknowledges.
We are not the ones, as Germans, to tell Polish government what to do, but in the European Union, we can tell them that from our point of view, it would make more sense to invest in renewable energies. It would be crazy if Poland would start using nuclear power in 2020 and Germany is leaving it in 2022.
But that is what seems likely to happen. Polish proponents of nuclear power are not downcast by Germany's move away from it. Nor are Poland's exporters of coal.
That was our correspondent, Steve Evans, in Berlin there. Jonathan Porritt, you argue the case for a nuclear-free future, argue for renewable energy sources. But as we heard there from Germany, economics and politics will count against it.
Two things about Germany. One, Angela Merkel was crazy to bring forward the closure of the nuclear power program. Once you've got these wretched things, these nuclear reactors, and they're operating safely, and you've already covered all the capital costs, you want to work them right through to the end of their life. This was just a really bad bit of politics. Secondly, however, having said that, it does sound odd when a representative of RWE, one of the big German energy companies, takes time out to trash solar power, which already generates 24 gigawatts, or they have installed 24 gigawatts, 24,000 megawatts of solar power in Germany, and it's one of the leading proponents of renewable energy anywhere in the world today. The reason why RWE is a bit cross is they didn't build any of that.
Keith Parker, you say that we need nuclear energy, but wouldn't you accept the truth is that few people actually want it? People are scared of it.
I don't think that's necessarily the case. I mean, if you look at the public opinion polls that we've conducted here in the UK, there is increasing support for nuclear as they begin to understand the benefits of nuclear.
Would you accept that, Jonathan Porritt, that people aren't scared of it?
I don't want people to be making decisions about these technologies on the basis of being scared. And to be fair to the nuclear industry, its operating record over the last 40 years has been much better than people think. That's not the principal argument against nuclear. That's not why we should turn our backs on nuclear. We've got to turn our backs on nuclear for economic reasons, waste generation reasons, security reasons. These are all much stronger arguments than low-level radiation and risk of major catastrophe.
There's been a little bit of head-shaking from everybody here. I'm not sure that you're all happy with everybody else's arguments. There's no reason you should be. Is there one thing that you do agree on?
I think we all agree on energy efficiency being much more important than any of these supply-side options. The truth of it is we have to reduce total energy consumption in the rich world by somewhere between 40 and 50% over the course of the next 30 years. That's what the destiny of the human species depends on. We spend far too much time rabbiting on about nuclear here and renewables there and gas over there. The real story is efficiency.
Can I get a nod from you two on that? Do you agree?
Yes, I do agree. I mean, energy efficiency has to be part of the progress that we make. But in the meantime, before we get to that position, we do need low-carbon, reliable sources of energy.
But such as? Sorry, I should remind people I'm talking to Keith Parker from the Nuclear Industry Association here. Such as?
Such as nuclear, together with renewables and carbon capture and storage. The low-carbon technologies which will improve our chances of meeting our carbon emission targets.
Keith Parker, Professor Martin Freer, Jonathan Porritt, thank you all very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thanks to you for listening. The email address is oneplanet@bbc.com, and you'd be very welcome to join the discussion underway right now on our Facebook page. If you search online for One Planet and the letters B, B and C, you'll find that, plus the podcast and much more. Until next week, from me, Mike Williams. Goodbye.
There are dozens of different podcasts now available from the BBC, including news, documentaries, science, business, arts and sport. For details of them all, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.